I was. Oh my goodness. I was one of those strange, obsessive children. I think a lot of kids have obsessions like, dinosaurs or ponies, And my obsession was birds, and it was a really big obsession, particularly birds of prey, and it didn't go away, So when I was a teenager, all my friends had posters of pop stars on their bedroom walls, and I had posters of kestrels and falcons. I mean, looking back on it, it was a bit eccentric. But yeah, it's always been a big part of my life.
And when your father died, I know that many people have to deal with their sorrow or grief in some ways. I read a book with Cheryl Strayed, whose mother died, and she went to the Pacific Coast Trail and wondered, how come you decided to tame a goshawk?
Yeah, that Cheryl Strayed book is amazing. If you haven't read it, I really loved that. Well, I guess each to their own. I mean, I think that everyone following the loss of a loved one, particularly if they're on their own, as I was at the time, you fall off the world a little bit. You need to go a little bit crazy, and you need to do that in order to rebuild yourself slowly into a new person, someone who can hold that grief within yourself. And I think that, you don't get over grief. That's always a terrible thing to think. You have to become this person that can keep the grief within you and bear it. And there are different ways of doing that. And you tend to want to kind of obliterate yourself. So people often drink a lot, or they have inadvisable affairs, or they go for these, like Cheryl, they went for this long walk. But a goshawk was my escape for lots of reasons. And one of them was that I'd always been interested in falconry. I'd always seen hawks as these amazing winged creatures that meant freedom and escape. But also, when I was very young, I read a book by a man called T.H. White that was about his attempts to train a goshawk in the 1930s, and it seemed to me that it was a book about running away from responsibilities to train a hawk, and I guess that was influential too. So lots of reasons together, but mainly because hawks are really cool, and I knew I couldn't tame grief, but I knew I could tame a hawk.
And you went to get Mabel. Was it love at first sight?
It was love at first sight, and it's kind of funny saying that, because obviously it wasn't a romantic love, but as soon as I saw this bird, this extraordinary creature that was looked like a cross between a dragon, and it looked a bit like a kind of something made of gold or something from a medieval manuscript, bright in the sunshine, this thing, I knew that she was my bird. And then the falconer said, "Oh, no, actually it's the other one that's yours." And I saw this other bird and I thought, "No, I don't want this one. I want the first one." And I ended up kind of pleading with him on this quayside, asking for the first bird. And I found out later that that second bird that I was supposed to have was almost impossible to tame. So I knew the bird, the right bird, to choose the right bird. And I'm very glad I chose Mabel. She was an amazing, amazing friend.
And she lived with you in your house. Is it common that to tame a bird, they live in your houses?
It would have been very, very common in the 17th century, and it's very common still in parts of the world like Pakistan, for example, where goshawks are still trained. It's a very good way to keep a bird tame, but also not bored. These birds can get bored. So, particularly in the early days of training, taming, she was in the house with me all the time. And it was actually a college house. I rented it from my university, and they didn't know about the hawk. I kept that really quiet. So, I still feel a bit guilty about that.
And as you said, you became very good friends. What is it with Mabel that made you so fascinated about her?
Well, I mean, goshawks are incredibly cool creatures. They are really awesome. I mean, people often ask me, what are they like? And if you've not seen one, and luckily, in Finland you have a lot of them, which is amazing, and you have a good chance of seeing one in the forests. But they're kind of a cross between a snow leopard and Christopher Walken. They're kind of these highly strung, psychopathic, beautiful predators. And Mabel, it's very interesting to sort of think about that sense. That can you be friends with an animal? And I think the answer is yes. And I've, in conversation with people who've kept goshawks since Mabel, I've realized that it is possible to have a very strong bond with a goshawk in a way that it isn't with other kinds of birds of prey. They seem to really get to love one person, and you become a team, you become buddies, and that's what happened with Mabel and me.
And you managed to play with her as well.
I did, yeah. I used to and discovered that she really liked to play, and I used to get bits of paper and squash them into balls and throw them to her, and she'd catch them in her beak and throw them back to me, and we'd play catch. And some of my goshawk friends, men who kept goshawks, were horrified by this. And they said to me, you know, you don't play with goshawks. They seem to present them as, in their imaginations, as something a bit like a feathered shotgun. You know, you don't play with them. They're these killing machines. And later I discovered that they all play with their goshawks. They just don't like to talk about it. It's very funny.
Yeah. You write somewhere in the book that as Mabel was becoming more and more tame, you realized that you were becoming more and more wild.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was the deep movement inside the book, really, is that I wanted to be like this bird. I really didn't want to be me anymore. I was really hurting from losing my dad, who was a real pal. And the bird offered me this alternative self. You know, she was this solitary, self-possessed, fierce creature who lived in the present, didn't have any human emotions. And I wanted to be like her to the point where I started to forget what it was like to be me. And it was a very beautiful experience to go out with her and watch her fly and hunt. But I started to lose sight of who I was. And that was, I think, quite a dangerous thing to have happened. I don't regret any of it, but I eventually got to the point where I realized that I'd gone way too far. I'd become too wild. And I was very depressed.
And you write somewhere that you prefer to be with the bird in the woods than to go out with your friends, for example.
Well, luckily, my friends have all forgiven me now. I was a hermit, you know, and I would get up in the morning and I would take the hawk from her nighttime perch on the floor and I would go out with her for hours and hours and hours. And I became this kind of Stone Age hunter. I'd had, you know, I had sort of scratches all over me. I didn't wash my hair. I had mud on me. And, you know, I lived out in the wild, and Mabel would catch pheasants and rabbits and we would share them. Obviously, I'd cook my part. And we lived off the land. It was a very intense experience. And, it was, looking back on it, I'm not really sure quite how I survived it. You know, I really did get very, very strange. But I guess it was, you know, my mother said to me a long time afterwards, well, you know, we just knew you'd get a hawk. You know, we knew that was going to be your way of coping. And I'd laugh and say, I didn't know I was going to get a hawk. And say, yeah, we all knew. It's my brother and her. And, we're very close. And she sort of looks back on it all and shakes her head and smiles and said, yeah, typical, typical Helen.
And, of course, you were afraid that Mabel would fly away. What would have happened if she would have flown away?
Well, this is the great thing for me about falconry, you know, this very ancient relationship between person and bird. I think it's the most ancient relationship between people and animals. It doesn't involve with the animal being eaten, you know, or domesticated. So, yeah, any time I flew Mabel, she could have just flown away, and she chose not to, which is one of the reasons I like falconry. It's that it's quite a, you know, equal relationship in that regard. I guess she would have been fine. There's a lot of pheasants and rabbits out in Cambridgeshire, but also there are a lot of people with guns. And I'm very glad that she didn't fly away, partly because I would have missed her, but partly because I think she would have been very vulnerable to someone with a shotgun. Because, you know, even though hawks are protected, people still shoot them.
Mabel isn't with us anymore. She died a couple of years ago.
She did, and I still miss her to bits. I flew her for a few more years in a much less intense and crazy manner. And we got to be even more, you know, good friends. And then a couple of years ago, she died very suddenly of a fungal infection called aspergillosis. It's an airborne infection. Kills a lot of wild goshawks as well as tame ones. It was very fast and nothing could be done. And I was in pieces, you know. But I guess that year with her taught me a lot about death. You know, none of us are here very long. The borders between life and death are very small. And my grief for her is a very simple grief. I just wish she was still around. I have a vase of her molted tail feathers on my desk. And sometimes when I'm feeling sentimental, I'll pick them up. And they still smell a bit like a goshawk, so... Oh my God, I sound terribly crazy, don't I? But I do, I miss her. She was as much as an animal can be a friend, she was a friend.
What did she teach you?
Well, they weren't simple lessons, you know. Sometimes people think this is a book that runs along the lines of, you know, I was sad, and then I got a cat, and then I was happy again. You know, it was more complicated. So the lessons she taught were ones about existence, I guess. They were ones about escape, about what the wild is like, you know, what it's like to see the wild through eyes that are not human in your imagination. about life and death, obviously, because she caught her own food. But actually, deep down, she taught me this lesson that we, all of us, we see nature as a mirror of ourselves. You know, for a long time, I saw Mabel as this mirror of my own grief and my own self. And slowly in the book, I began to realize that actually she's just a bird, you know. And that was a great moment, you know, because realizing how different she was from me, how inhuman and spectacularly strange she was, and yet we still have this friendship, was a great moment. And she taught me to try and look past the meanings that we give nature and see the actual animals and beasts behind our human ideas.
And you said you got a lot of scars.
Yeah, I have a few scars.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, I have a parrot now, and I have more scars from my parrot than I ever had from my goshawk, you know. Goshawks are very simple creatures emotionally, you know, if they're happy or they're sad or they're angry. And if you upset a goshawk, it's just upset, and then it forgives you. If you upset a parrot, it remembers. You know, they can be very vindictive. So, yeah, my parrot has given me more scars than my goshawk.
But do you still do falconeering, I suppose?
I haven't time. I mean, this book has been... To me, you know, I've been astounded and overjoyed and surprised and bewildered by how successful it's been. And I've been on tour for a couple of years now. And I mean, a falcon or a hawk is a big commitment. And you need a lot of time, a lot of dedication. I don't have time to have a hawk now. But I'm hoping in the future that there will be another bird in my life. She won't be like Mabel, or he won't be like Mabel. Mabel was like the bird of a lifetime, you know. And I'll always miss her. But there'll be more wings in my life.